What is peace brain? Peace brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics, open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth, and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is Dr. Gail Lash, and we're really happy to have you here today. Today, we're going to be talking about some really exciting topics of peace, and that is we're going to be talking about change and how we all propel ourselves through it and how we're all interconnected. And then particularly, with my guest here today, Karen Kelly, we're going to be talking about her project called Margins, which is a photographic artist project that, you'll see as we get into it, but it basically helps us to connect with marginalized peoples. So let me open today with a quote, as I normally do, and of course, please stay tuned to the end of the show where we have a wonderful transformative meditation, always at the end of our show. So today the quote is from Albert Einstein, and it goes like this. It says, "A human being is part of the whole, called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings as separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its bounty." So, with this quote, it really reminds us that we are in unity with all things. And we need to remember we're not just sitting here on the universe in our lonesome shell, in our own cocoon, if you will, that we really are growing and morphing into what's next for each of us, and that is all interconnected. That is all interwoven. And we are moving around each other and influencing each other with our thoughts and our actions. So when one of us does something, the others feel it. So nothing is ever static. Everything is moving, and we are all interconnected. Today I saw an article by National Geographic, and it's called Our World in Motion. And this I want to talk about for just a minute because this is a call out to the public. Unfortunately, it ends today on August 16th, but its message is timeless. And it reads, it says, "As we sit here writing this at our kitchen table in the Hudson Valley of New York, the world seems quite still. The bowl of fruit next to the keyboard, two apples, an orange, two bananas, is a still life. The potted plant, although in desperate need of a watering, just sits there. The room seems silent, no movement. The ticking of the clock shatters this illusion, reminding us that the second hand is hurtling forward, forever chasing the future. Through our window, a breeze sends the slightest ripple across maple leaves that magically unfurl themselves from tiny buds only a few weeks before. A lace curtain shudders. Children's voices echo through the neighborhood, traveling at the speed of sound, and by the time the laughter reaches our ears, the children are older than they ever have been. We are listening to the younger versions, for they have changed ever so slightly, grown a little older, and we smile at the giggles of their past selves. We live in a world of motion, forever changing and growing, moving and blurring. Our job as still photographers, and your assignment, is to capture it. How do you show a world in motion? Of course, you think of bicycles blurring, people dancing, or birds in flight, but also think of ripples on a lake or wrinkles on skin. Star trails hint at the Earth's rotation as lava flows build a new world. Motion is progress and propulsion. Cultures and norms are forever in flux, advancing and contracting. They too are in motion. So we ask you to sit quietly for a moment contemplating our world in motion. Then grab your cameras and capture it. So this was a call from National Geographic out to the public, and I'm sure they will have the registrants, the people who write in and send in their photographs on our world in motion. So look forward to that. And this is exactly what our guest today, Karen Kelly, and I are going to talk about, and this is what Karen has done. She has gone out and captured people in portraits of a moment in their life, people that we rarely think to look at, those who are marginalized in society, and offer their faces up for study, contemplation, and connection. Karen is a Renaissance lady, and she lives here in Atlanta, Georgia. She's a real estate broker, an artist, a waitress, a photographer, and really just a very amazing person, very deep and contemplative, and I think you will love the show today. So we're going to be talking about her project Margins and about the constant change that we all live in. So welcome, Karen, to the Peace Brain Show. So happy to have you here today.
Hi, thank you.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about how Margins came about or what your thoughts are behind that.
First, I just wanted to make a small correction. I am not a real estate broker. I am technically, by the state of Georgia, a real estate salesperson, what people commonly think of as an agent.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that because there are just some legal things. I can't claim to be a broker.
Got it. Okay. I didn't know the difference, so that's my mistake there.
That's okay. Well, thank you. Margins grew out of, I think it grew out of my experiences, because I experienced the change that I think most of the country experienced. I came from a very small town where, you know, white was white, black was black, right was right, wrong was wrong. It was all very clear cut. And when I moved to Atlanta, I was 40 when I moved up here. Of course, I'd been exposed to the media and the internet and everything else, but by and large, my perceptions were really formed, I think, by my community and my family. When I moved up here and I actually was just immersed in what is really a cultural melting pot compared to where I came from, I was faced with my own ideas about what I had learned, what I had been taught, and not things that were mostly unconscious, really, because I thought I loved everyone and everything was equality was just a given. But when you're truly faced with people who are different from you and you have to kind of take account of yourself, take inventory and say, okay, well, am I really a good person? You don't know. I mean, you don't know how you'll act until you're faced with those things, I think. So things like transgender and homosexuality, people of different races, religions, colors. It was no longer just an intellectual idea. These were real people. And I was amazed to see my fellow humans acting in ways that made me sad. the prejudice and hatred and disregard for other humans just kind of built up over the course of several years living here until finally it all came to a head at a Christmas party where a dear friend of mine, she hosted a Christmas party. Her sister, Caitlin, had just I don't know the word. She just came out as transgender. And before that we all knew Caitlin as Nick. And guests at her party, at my friend's party, were purposefully rude and condescending to Caitlin, specifically one woman, an elder, sort of a matriarch of one of the families invited, insisted on calling Caitlin he by Caitlin's former name, talking over Caitlin, just pretty much being rude and attempting to make Caitlin the butt of a joke without making a joke. It was
That must have been hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. It was hard to watch, so I just began quietly and firmly correcting her and saying she, her, Caitlin did, Caitlin said, and finally the old lady just stopped. She just stopped. The first time I did it and made myself heard by the group, you could have heard a pin drop because no one expected anyone to challenge this old lady.
Mm.
But it she was a guest in my friend's home and she was insulting my friend's sister. And besides that, she was just being kind of a vile person in general, because even if she wasn't a guest, even if it was her home, it would have been rude and ugly.
What courage you had to say something. Mm-hmm. That's really wonderful.
Well, I didn't feel very courageous. I just felt angry. Mm-hmm. And my children, I have a daughter who is 18. Well, I have three children. I have a 25-year-old daughter, an 18-year-old daughter, and a 16-year-old son. And I find that their generation is much better equipped to deal with these sorts of injustices. They know about them. They knew about them intimately. They are the ones who have educated me when I had questions. They're the ones I go to.
Hmm.
Because their generation is very vocal about this in the social media that they use. They use Reddit. They use Tumblr a lot more than adults do. Adults stick on to Facebook and maybe Pinterest. But where there is this really, this sort of social revolution is with, like, my children's generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited to know that, you know, we talk about, oh, we've got to do this for the next generation. The next generation, they've got this stuff sealed. Like, they know what they're doing.
They do. You're absolutely correct.
They're just waiting for the dinosaurs to go extinct.
To go extinct.
Yeah. Yes. So, and my children have introduced me to individuals who are transgender, transsex. They explained what those terms meant to me because, you know, I'm a dinosaur and I'm like, there's male and female. What are you talking about? And they're like, no, Mom, that's so outdated. And I fought it. I fought it much like the rest of society fights. And I'm like, no, I'm older than you and I know things. And they educated me. All I had to do was shut up and listen.
Mm.
And once you know better, you have to do better. And now I know better.
Great point. I love what you just said of shut up and listen, because these kids really do know. They are so tuned into the world and what's going on and how to make it better. They are here to basically, you know, rip everything apart and create a new world in a new manner that a lot of us have not ever thought of. And then to help them and to really move forward with that is fantastic, to really then speak up, to do the right thing. So congrats on that.
Thank you. So I've been thinking of Margins as my personal project, but now that I actually talk about it, I guess it's really a collaboration, isn't it, between this new generation, this force of change that's coming. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it.
So my kids, or should.
yeah,
because
right, exactly.
It's meant to be.
Mm-hmm. So my children are educating me, and not just my children, but their friends as well. And I'm using skills, my adult skills. So I am a photographer. I'm very good at what I do. I also am quite skilled at marketing, writing up, you know, I know how to write professionally and technically. So these are skills that I can use that, say, you know, an 18-year-old might not know yet.
Mm-hmm.
They may not have acquired these skills. And of course, we're always, always, always building on the accomplishments of those who came before us.
Yeah.
None of this would have been possible without the suffragettes, without Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, and at Rosa Parks. All these people that have brought equality forward, so it's nothing new. It's just this is my, you know, my task. This is what I've been given.
Mm-hmm. So are you using your children to assist you or give you ideas about your photographic project, Margins?
My children and I have a really good relationship, and I didn't realize how kind of odd it was. not that a good relationship is odd, but our relationship is, I think, a little different than most people. We talk about everything all the time. So I treat my children, I think, the way they should be treated, because they're intelligent and they see things and hear things and know things that I have no access to.
Mm-hmm.
So we share information and we discuss ideas as if we were peers almost.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly I do, I pass my ideas about the project, you know, by my children, and I tell them, I say, okay, pull it apart. Show me where the holes are. Like if we were in a debate, like,
mm-hmm.
like rip me apart so I can see where where it's no good.
Right.
And I can strengthen it. But definitely, my middle child, Emily, is 18, and she's, since she was old enough to carry a reflector, she's helped me with my portrait shoots.
Wow.
Because she likes it, and she's interested.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I've actually used some of her contacts as my subjects for this first leg of Margins, which is, we're calling Margins X.
So I want to explore one thing. You said that you asked them to pull it apart and tell you where it's not working. So this is kind of a bigger theme, and we'll see where this goes or not. But most people don't want to be pulled apart and told what's not working because we're comfortable with where we are. This gets back to the concept of change and how everything's dynamic and moving and is changing. So obviously you've got a very forward-thinking agenda and mind that you are willing to go forward with and making it better. And not that we all don't want to make life better, it's just many times we don't want to hear the negative. So how did you get there? I mean, what gave you, again, back to the courage or the the confidence to ask a question like that? Pull me apart. What's not working?
I think that's just part of my marketing background. I majored in art. I came out of school in 96, and then I did graphic design for several years. And when we had our first recession, it's all the same, man, way back, the first jobs that always get cut are the art jobs. So an in-house designer is going to go before an accountant will. So I had to learn, and I realized that, you know, we cycle through these mini recessions pretty quickly in our country, or we have. So I had to learn how to do something else and make myself valuable. And marketing was just the thing that made the most sense. And in working in the marketing field, you learn that if you put something out there that hasn't been thoroughly vetted in-house, the public will tear it apart. The public will always find your typographical errors. They will always find the one sentence in your speech that seems hypocritical. And if you don't find it before you launch it, you're still going to find it.
So, interesting. Yes, you're right.
It's just going to be a whole lot worse. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think that's where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
I've certainly always loved debate in high school. I think it's useful.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, you're right, because when things come out, the public is very, you know, they scrutinize everything, and we all do. So it's interesting.
And I think our society as a whole is learning that, as, you know, our mothers and grandmothers and aunts go on to social media. And I think early adopters have known what, like, trolls were for years and years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of funny to see your mom quote on a meme and get trolled and not know what in the world is going. She's like, what is this person doing? Why are they arguing? Why are they saying such mean things? And, it's, you know, so the whole country at once is kind of finding out that people will rip you to shreds if you say something that you cannot defend. And they may try to rip you to shreds anyway with arguments that don't hold water, but you have to be able to take those punches, and you have to be able to say, no, I stand firm, because this is truth, and truth is the only thing that will ever stand up to that kind of scrutinization.
Wise words. And so getting back to your margins and back to the story of that Christmas party, I mean, it is about then showing the truth in your photographs, correct?
It is. And I admit the first group that I felt this like it was a painful realization when I moved to Atlanta. I noticed that the homeless, several people would tell me, "No, the problem is you're getting yourself upset. Like, it doesn't have to be this way. Just don't look them in the eye, and they will not approach you. But if you make eye contact, they're going to approach you, and they're going to tell you their story. They're going to ask for something. So the trick is, you just don't look them in the eye."
Didn't sit very well with you.
It did not sit very well with me at all. I mean, they thought they were giving me practical advice. And I will admit, what they said is true. If you don't make eye contact with people, they generally will not feel confident enough to approach you. And so I looked around with fresh eyes, and I saw these homeless people shuffling through Midtown, and I was like, they're like zombies.
Mm.
No one looks at them. They're missing the most basic human need, which is like interaction.
Which is contact, yeah.
Contact, wow. Yes. I mean, and if you can't get physical contact, like a hug, a handshake, you know, just to be held sometimes is so healing. These people aren't even getting eye contact. They're not getting, they're right there, physically, in your space, and you are not acknowledging that they exist.
That, so they're not being seen, and they're not being heard. Yes.
Yeah. And they're getting the message over and over every day that they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think that's really where the roots of margins came from. I remember when I first moved here that I cried and cried and cried. And we finally moved from Midtown to Candler Park. And it was easier because I didn't see so many people because they don't move. They stay in the same place. Like the homeless people at Little Five Points stay in Little Five Points. That's where you will find the same faces every day. The ones in Piedmont Park are always in Piedmont Park. So you actually get to know these people
mm-hmm.
if you pay attention, if you look around. And then, so maybe I lived here long enough that I kind of got used to it. I got my emotional calluses built up. And then the whole transgender thing kind of reached maximum saturation to where it broke through into the general consciousness, and no one can deny that it is a topic. It is something that we're seeing everywhere, from tiny little farm towns to metropolitan cities. And I realized immediately, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just like the homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing. People don't want to acknowledge that Caitlin is Caitlin, and you're still calling Caitlin Nick, and you're still referring to Caitlin as he, but you don't have that right. This is Caitlin is human. You know, Caitlin introduces herself as a woman, and when she does, at that point, no one has the right to tell Caitlin that she's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's true. We all get to choose our
yes.
pronouns that we use for ourselves, right?
Etiquette books. Emily Post says it is rude to point out that a dinner guest has spinach in their teeth.
Just
let that sink
mm-hmm.
in for
yep.
a moment. So you can't tell someone that they have food in their teeth, but you can tell them that they're calling themselves the wrong gender? No, of course you can't. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there are so many ways to fight this prejudice and injustice and just lack of humanity. I mean, with every kind of logic that people already know and accept. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get back to the parallel of when we each go through a change.
Mm-hmm.
There was a workshop on change that I attended, a facilitation workshop on how to work with employees when organizations go through change and, you know, implement something different, et cetera. And there's this
mm-hmm.
this graph or this formula kind of as what we all go through where, you know, the change is a shock. And we have all these negative emotions like anger and disappointment and frustration. And then we get into this neutral zone of, well, what's happening? How kind of this numbness, this how do I proceed, this questioning everything. And then you start to climb into a new beginning of, okay, new habits, new beliefs, new hopes, new practices, and then that new change becomes the norm. But until we go through those stages, that's just normal for people to go through those stages. But we have to be aware to work with ourselves and others to help go through those changes, which means we have to allow people to be heard and to be seen. And, you know, you're talking about, obviously these dialogues need to happen about recognizing our fellow human beings as equal, even,
right.
you know, we had for eons have been working on this within the racial, you know, unity progress. And then now, as you bring up the transgender and all these other diversity that, of the human race, and to really realize that, you know, if I was going through something, I would want to be heard and seen as a human being. And so
sure.
it's that golden
yeah.
rule, you know, how do we treat others like we want to treat ourselves?
I thought it was interesting, the stages that you described.
Mm-hmm.
You described the stages of grief.
Yes. Yes.
So when the old passes away, it is kind of a death. I mean, it's not the death of a living being, but it's the death of something that you've known.
Exactly.
And it's those stages are exactly the stages of grief. And I think so. For like my mother's generation, the fight was for racial equality, and she is from the very deep South. Her stepfather actually withdrew her from school in December of 1970, because that's when desegregation was implemented in our tiny little town. Mm-hmm. She was a senior in high school with 6 months to go.
Oh, wow.
And she did not graduate high school because of desegregation. And so my mother's generation says, oh, my gosh, all this political correctness, like if you say anything, you're going to offend someone. But isn't that what we've been going towards the whole time? Because what we're now realizing is that hatred is born of fear of the other. And if you can dehumanize the other, whether it's Muslims, whether it's Iraqis, whether it's black people, gay people, transgender people, cross-dressers, whatever. Rebels, the homeless. If you can dehumanize a group, you can hate them. And you'll only dehumanize them if they scare you. And so I think that's the larger picture, the political correctness that people are pushing against is because, honey, it's real easy. You don't have the right to hate anyone ever for being different. And everything's going to be so much easier if we just love each other and find a way to make it work for everyone. And I'm not talking about, you know, crumbling of the free market or anything, but just quite literally what I said, like just you can't dehumanize anyone for any reason. And it's silly. It's holding on progress.
It's starting to look at the other as, okay, what do we have in common? And I think we so much put the negative first, like how is this different rather than, or how is this not working rather than how is it working? How are we the same? And, you know, as a biologist, the human species is just that, the human species. So we are all one species, Homo sapiens. And certainly we have different hair colors and different body types and different cultural practices and dress and foods, et cetera. But that's the beauty of the human race, actually. That is the diversity of the tree or the flowers in the garden. You know, if we were all the same color and the same height and the same, like the flowers all looked the same and smelled the same, it would be a really boring garden. You need that diversity, that beauty.
Wouldn't it? Yes.
Yes. So we haven't taught, and maybe we don't need to teach our children at this point. The children are learning this by themselves. Well, I'll admit that. We do need to teach our children as well. But it's about the children are recognizing the diversity and really honoring it and respecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of what this next generation can bring to the table is they are already becoming mixed and they're already traveling and they're already, because of social networks and the global connections, mm-hmm. they already are connected to people around the planet and know that, hey, just because they look different than me or they speak a different language, et cetera, they're okay. I can be friends with them.
Yes. In fact, this is the one thing that tickled me is that the very first people who took part in my project and allowed me to take their photographs and their names were two transgender people who had just turned 18, and they both live, and I took the portraits in my tiny hometown of Thomasville, Georgia, which is about 12 miles north of the Florida border and as deep south as you can get. It wasn't people from Atlanta. It wasn't, you know, it was actually young adults from this tiny little isolated community where the voices of resistance that I hear, you know, mm-hmm. in my personal network, they're the voices of the adults that are giving me the most resistance. They're the loudest, saying, you know, this is wrong. And yet, you know, my early adopters of my project were people from that little place where it's still, you know, in many ways, not acceptable.
Mm-hmm. In other words, it's happening. It happens everywhere that we have
everywhere.
This diversity. Everywhere. It doesn't depend on whether you're a big city with what you're making me think of is that, you know, the urban centers have all this sin or diversity or and mm-hmm. it, and in our purity of the rural areas, well, this can't happen. But obviously, people are people, and we live everywhere and in all situations. And that's and so these transgender and obviously different religions and cultures and races happen everywhere.
Yes. My daughter pointed out during one of our discussions, she was like, well, think about when you were a kid. Was it ever weird for you to have black people in your classroom? And I said, no, I had black teachers. I had black, classmates. When my parents talked about the civil rights movement, it seemed like something that happened in the last century. I was so far beyond that in my thinking,
right.
And my classmates were as well, that I didn't pay attention. It never occurred to me that these things had gone on, you know, the year before I was born.
Good point.
And, you know, less than a decade, because I was like 8 or 9, and I remember, you know, my parents and grandparents talking about civil rights and Martin Luther King and all this stuff. But to me, it was a dead topic. It didn't even need to be discussed. I was like, what are you talking about? And my mom was amazed when I was in college because I took my best friend to my grandparents' house for dinner. And she was a beautiful African-American woman, and we were studying the same thing. We were both art majors, and my mom said that she held her breath until we left because she thought that my grandfather was going to embarrass me and embarrass my friend and be rude. And no, he sat down, and he was as nice as he could be, broke bread, hugged her when we left, and told her to come back anytime. So I think even the people that resist the most eventually get to that point of acceptance. Like, maybe it just takes them a little longer to get through their stages of grief, but I think there's hope.
Mm-hmm.
For all of us.
I agree with you. I think we are moving certainly in that direction at actually a very fast pace, but I will point out there, as we know, racism is still extremely alive, and even though the civil rights movement happened, there's still a lot to be done. And your Margins photographic exhibit points to that, and your story points to that, that we all need to speak up. There's actually a movie and it's on YouTube, called White Like Me, and it's a takeoff on the movie Black Like Me, but this one is really good. It's done by, I've forgotten his name, I want to say Tim, I can't remember his last name. Anyway, look it up on YouTube. But it's basically, he points out that racism is still, obviously, as we know, very much alive, but it's up to whites to speak out and to do basically what you did at that Christmas party, and to say, no, this isn't right. We need to change. We need to change. The whites need to change in the way that the dominant, in other words, the dominant ethnicity or race needs to realize that all of the other diversity of humans needs to be included, and we need to speak up so that they can be seen and heard and treated
with
equally.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Exactly.
And that's what I feel. I used the term golden ticket in a recent post on Facebook, and people asked me, what does that mean? And I was like, oh, I thought everyone had heard. It's just a term referring to white males. They have the so-called Willy Wonka's golden ticket because they make, if four people were given jobs that were exactly the same, the white man's going to make more. He's never going to be pushed out the door because of his color, ever.
Mm-hmm.
People will assume that he's smart. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's white privilege. And by the grace of the Creator, I was born a white female. And to be honest, our tickets are almost gold. Really. I've never been pushed away because I was white. I've never been disrespected. I've seen, a black woman behind me in the grocery line back when people wrote checks, and I would write a check, give it to the cashier, and, I'm very disorganized, so I'd always be, gathering up my children, trying to put them back in the cart, get them away from the candy. So I'd stand there, and the black lady would write a check, and they would pull out the book, the bad check book, and look through. They didn't look through the bad check book for me. But
yeah.
There was nothing at all.
It's a great example. You're right.
It happens all the time, and we become blind to it.
Exactly.
So. Yeah.
So that's exactly what the movie is talking about, is don't be blind, and really work with society to bring that equality back to where it needs to be, or to where it needs to be. It's never been back to. It's never been there. And we're all learning on a global scale how to actually do that, how to actually live inequality. And again, back to the millennials, to the kids coming up in these years, sure there's bullying, sure there's a lot of angst around, and anxiety and racism and, marginalization among them too. But they see, I believe, that has to change. And I think they get it. I really do. I think they're working towards it, that unity of humankind.
Well, certainly at least everyone in that generation who goes to a public school has heard the word transgender. They're aware that people can be born a female and later decide, or not decide, but later announce that, no, something went a little wrong and I look like a woman, but I am really a man. They're aware that that exists. I had never heard of this when I was in high school. If someone told me that happened, that someone had done that, and it had happened. I mean, there were transgender people back through the millennium, but it had never came in, you know, it never came into my sphere of realization. I'd never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I certainly would have pushed back, and I think knowledge, at least, is the first step.
It is.
So even if they're, even if they're against it, at least they know it exists. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. So tell us, we're getting towards the end of the show, and I wanted to put out your website. It's KarenKellyStudios.com. That's KarenKellyStudios, and then Y, and then StudiosCom. And so, Karen, when do you think you will have this project completed, or where we can actually see it somewhere?
I had thought that I would have all of the images that I wanted in this leg completed, edited, and printed before I published anything. But I recently decided that I'm going to publish images as I go, and then the totality of the images will be in gallery shows. So you'll be able to follow me along as it progresses. And I'm going to get the initial images up in the next few days, but there will be links from my website, and I have a blog on my website, so it'll certainly be featured there, and it'll be really easy to find if you go to that website.
Awesome. So again, that's KarenKellyStudios.com.
That's
we really look forward to seeing it. I'm excited about that because, as you said to me earlier, if they really these features, the faces of people, because they are in photographic form, people have the permission, if you will, to stare at them and to really get to know and see that person that we can't politely do in public.
And we touched on this a little earlier when we were talking about the homeless people and don't look them in the eye and they won't approach you. And the main thing is when someone looks you in the eye, they cannot deny your humanity. And if you look someone in the eye, you can't deny their humanity. The portraits, the people are looking directly into my lens, and so the resulting images will be people looking directly into the eyes of the viewer. And that's the other thing, too. It's going to kind of force a connection, whether the viewer wants it or not. And
very clever. Really good point.
But but because it is a portrait and it's not a real person, it will also be non-threatening in a way. Because you're going to obviously know this is a piece of paper with chemicals on it, that an image, basically.
Right.
So it's a little less threatening than looking into the eyes of a real person. But still, at the heart level, you've looked them in the eye at that point.
That's true. Thank you.
Thank you for letting me get the word out.
Anything else you want to say to our listeners before we close up your segment and go into the meditation?
No, I think that's it.
Well, thanks, Karen. I really appreciate the conversation and learning more about your project and speaking about how we can make it a better world of peace and unity.
And thank you for telling me so long ago about the peace poles and your work. Everything that we come into contact with influences us in some way. And you've certainly had a huge impact on me and my thinking and my direction. So thank you, Gail.
Oh, you're very welcome. My goodness, thank you. All right. Well, thank you, Karen. And we're going to go into the Peace Brain Meditation. So I invite everyone to just take a breath and kind of digest what you just heard. You're welcome to close your eyes or not, but give yourself a grounding cord, that connection for your physical body to the center of the planet, and I like to envision a tree trunk or a beam of light coming out of the base of my spine. I'm going all the way down to the center of the planet and anchoring into the iron crystal core of Mother Earth, just so we each are connected. And you can let any energy that is not of this moment flow down that cord and to be recycled into Mother Earth, so you can be present and really be here now. So think about your childhood. Think about how you grew up and how you viewed the humanity around you. Were you in a diverse situation? Were you aware of people different than you? Or perhaps you were not. It's all okay. No right or wrong at this moment. You're simply remembering the past. So be aware of what your situation was. What were you taught? How were you taught to act with people? Perhaps from your parents and your peers, or your minister, or your rabbi. What opportunities have you had in your life to notice the differences among us of the human race? So perhaps as you grew older, you traveled or went to a new city and actually saw more diversity and saw the changes and the situations that people were in. Just reflect for a moment, again, no right or wrong, on how you felt at that time. And take a breath. And as you remember the past, now bring yourself into the present. What opportunities do you have for yourself today to notice the humanity around you and to really connect with the humans around you, whether they be of your own circle or in your work, or whether they be in a larger sphere of influence, like in a larger organization or national or global areas that you maybe are in connection with. Allow yourself to feel that connectedness with people who are different than you. See them as humans. See them as having a life that is very similar as far as getting up in the morning and needing to go through the daily rituals of eating and dressing and cleaning oneself and interacting with one's family and going to work if they have work and finding something to do that is creative with the human spirit to really honor that each of us are divine beings, that we are actually not only biologically similar and the same genetically overall, that we actually have a spirit that is connected, an energy that connects us around the planet as well. So feel those connections. Transport yourself perhaps to a new place, a new country, and see yourself standing on the street. And how would you want to be treated as you walk into that new culture? Or see yourself looking that homeless person in the eye and seeing the humanity in him or her. Or saying hello to your transgender neighbor and welcoming him or her into your community and into your family. Think about the talents that you have in this world, that you are a gift to the world through your art or your music or your marketing or your being an accountant or an attorney or a teacher. Whatever your talents are, be proud of them. Know that that is your gift to the world. And then see another person and their talents and know that that is their gift to the world. We are all here to make a better place. We are all connected. When one of us does something, it affects all the others. And so take a breath and feel that connection, heart to heart and eye to eye, with those you know and with those you do not know. And feel the warmth of that connection, the beauty of it. And know that is the world of peace that we are all creating. This is the world that the new generations, the millennials and the ones after them, are creating. A world of unity and love and justice and respect. A world where we each can be seen and we each can be heard and valued. And the diversity brings the beauty to the garden. Be in that beauty and walk in that beauty. And I invite you to open your eyes and return to your seat or your room or wherever you are. And thank you for tuning in to the Peace Brain Show today. And thanks to Karen Kelly, our guest, and her photographic exhibit, Margins. And you can follow that again at KarenKellyStudios.com. And if you'd like to connect with me, Dr. Gail Lash, about our Tourism for Peace or our Peace Master Plans or my upcoming book, Peace Brain 101, you can find out more about me at tourismforpeace.com. And so now I invite you to please go forth and activate your peace brain and put your mark on the World Peace Trails map. Many blessings.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Alchemy of Peace coaching sessions, her Peace Master Plans for your business or organization, and her upcoming book, Peace Brain 101. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 2 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern for the Peace Brain Show and your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.